Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Warm welcome from Bonn, Germany, with the stories making headlines across the continent. This is Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu. Coming up, Nigerian activists struggle to keep the Chibok Bring Back Our Girls campaign alive as the anguish continues.
At this point, we are begging, we are pleading that they should do all that is needful and let the girls come back.
The World Health Organization says the Ebola epidemic is bigger than previously thought.
In the past with outbreaks, things have stopped and then it's been okay. But with this outbreak, things look like they're settling down and then they flare up again. So it's as if you're fighting many fires on many different fronts.
And robots made in Africa for Africa. Don't miss out these stories and more in the next 25 minutes. I'll be right back.
Top story.
Half a year in captivity. On April 14th, nearly 300 schoolgirls were abducted by Boko Haram gunmen from their school in Chibok, northeastern Nigeria. Tuesday marked 6 months since the kidnapping took place. The Bring Back Our Girls campaign, which emerged as a result of social media viral frenzy, has been putting pressure on President Goodluck Jonathan's government to rescue the missing girls. But as our correspondent Sam Olukoya told me, their protest did not get off to a good start.
Well, the highlight of the protest is supposed to be a march to the president's office. But unfortunately, they couldn't get to the office as policemen blocked their path, mainly policewomen. They refused them access to the president's office. And what the authorities did was to send a female minister, Women's Affairs, to address the protesters, telling them that the government is doing its best to bring back the girls. Of course, there were lots of parents there who said the government has not done enough, and the president's uncle was kidnapped, and the president was able to bring back his uncle. So he should do the same thing. He should apply the same method he applied to bring back his uncle to this girl so that they could come back and reunite with their families.
Were the protesters somehow comfortable with what the government was telling them, or were they still frustrated at the lack of information from the presidents on the whereabouts of the girls?
I think that the protesters have had so many stories in the last 6 months, so there's hardly anything new that the government will tell them at this stage that they will believe. It's all been the same story of we are doing our best. At a stage, they said they've seen the girls, and that are taking all, I mean, as far back as June or thereabout, they said they knew where the girls were. So if we are talking of October, and you said you knew where the girls were as far back as June, so why have you not brought them back? These are the questions the protesters are asking, that whatever the government is doing as we speak is just trying to cover up.
Interest in the abducted schoolgirls has been waning considerably. Did the protest manage to reawaken interest in it again?
Well, sure. It did a lot to bring up the issue again. And for many people, it's a period to look back that 6 months have passed and nothing concrete has been done. And for many, it's a situation where they feel that they can no longer trust the government. They cannot put their security in the hands of the government. I mean, if anything happens to you, you cannot be confident to say that the government will come to your rescue. So it's like a period of reflection.
And what about school children? How safe do they feel in attending school after the incident in Chibok and 6 months with no word from the girls?
Well, for many, it's a situation where you cannot predict precisely, especially in areas where the insurgency is more pronounced. You can never be sure of the fate of your children. Even far out towards central Nigeria, we've seen attacks on schools, we've seen bomb attacks on schools, so even at the tertiary level. So people don't have that sense of safety about their children being in school, especially in the northern part of the country.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. As we've just heard, the Chibok girls' abduction led to fear of attending school, especially in northeastern Nigeria. To counter that, the Nigerian government launched a project known as Safe School Initiative. It was meant to enhance the safety of the children plus their teachers, as well as restore confidence of parents in keeping their children in school. But as we now hear from Mark Caldwell in this report by Philip Sandner and Idris Owaisu, many Nigerian students still feel unsafe.
6 months after the Chibok girls were kidnapped, Buki Shonebare still feels the pain of loss.
Want them back. So we are simply asking, at this point we are begging, we are pleading, that they should do all that is needful and let the girls come back.
Shonebare is a member of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign, and like many others, he finds the uncertainty surrounding the girls' fate unbearable. Despite the international outcry at the seizure of the girls, such kidnappings are not uncommon in northern Nigeria. Boko Haram has been blamed not just for this raid, but for the deaths of more than 70 teachers and the destruction of more than 900 schools in Borno State. Reacting to criticism that it has been idly standing by while innocent schoolchildren go in fear of their lives, the Nigerian government has started a Safe School Initiative. Better lighting and alarm systems are going to be installed in school buildings. New schools are going to be built with fire-resistant materials in future. President Goodluck Jonathan has pledged to pour $100 million into the scheme, but campaigners like Shonebare are unimpressed, believing the government has got its priorities in the wrong order.
Well, the Safe School Initiative, for us, we can't be talking about Safe School Initiative if we don't have the Chibok girls back. Girls are still afraid to go to school in the northeast. Safe School Initiative will be meaningless if the Chibok girls don't return.
In the town of Mubi in Adamawa State, some 100 kilometres from Chibok, the government has introduced new security measures. Uniformed guards now patrol the grounds of a local college, but they are unarmed. This student is far from satisfied with what is being done to guarantee her safety.
There are no real security measures at our school. The government ought to give the security personnel weapons and equipment. Only after that will I feel safe enough to concentrate on my studies.
The teachers are also worried. One of them says there ought to be a fence around the school, and whenever he sees the students leaving, he worries about whether they will ever be coming back again. It would appear that defeating Boko Haram would be the only sure way of protecting schools in northeastern Nigeria. But the relentless attacks by the Islamist militia would suggest that that goal is some way off.
That was a joint report by Philip Sandner and Idris Owaisu.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Rising numbers. The Ebola epidemic is showing no signs of slowing down in Guinea, Sierra Leone and Liberia. The death rate has risen to 70% and the number of people carrying the virus will exceed 9,000 this week, according to the World Health Organization. The UN Health Agency on Tuesday warned that the number of cases in West Africa could be much higher than was previously thought. I asked Dr. Margaret Harris, WHO spokesperson in Sierra Leone, for more information on how the outbreak was unfolding.
We're still seeing the virus well ahead of us, and we're still seeing an acceleration in cases here in Sierra Leone, particularly in the districts in the western side of the country, in Freetown, in an area north of Freetown called Port Loko and Bombali. One of the good signs is the number of cases in the eastern side of the country are reducing, but the epidemic in the western side is certainly still accelerating.
Now, you've mentioned that the eastern side, the infection rates there are reducing. But again, the World Health Organization has urged caution that we shouldn't start celebrating. So when would be the right time to say, OK, we've put this behind us?
When we haven't seen a new case for 42 days. So we really We know from especially experience with this outbreak in the past with outbreaks, things have stopped and then it's been okay. But with this outbreak, things look like they're settling down and then they flare up again. So it's as if you're fighting many fires on many different fronts. So until we don't see a new case for 42 days, we don't say it's over.
Right. Let's now talk about the figures that have just been released. How did the WHO come up with these new figures on the number of infections?
There are many projections. There are many models. There are various very intelligent, very extraordinarily talented modelling groups in different universities, and they've come up with a range of projections. We're certainly expecting many more cases than we have at the moment, but those figures are based on often worst-case scenarios, in other words, scenarios that could occur if we don't make a real dent in the outbreak.
What do these new projections mean for the efforts to fight the outbreak?
Well, they help because one of the most important things is having enough beds, having enough places to treat people. So if you have somebody with Ebola, you want to isolate them and you want to treat them. And you've got two different reasons for doing this. Isolating them is in order to stop that infection spreading to anyone else. Treating them is because they are very sick people and they need to be treated. But when you treat them, you then put the nursing staff and the medical staff who treat them at great risk, as we've even seen in Spain and the US, that they are at great risk of getting infected. So you must prepare yourself very well. You must prepare not only places where people can be treated, where they can be isolated while they're treated, but where the staff are extremely well trained and very well equipped. This requires an enormous amount of planning and preparation. So we're now looking at worst-case scenarios in order to prepare as well as possible and to make sure that we get as many beds as possible on the ground in order to treat people and in order to really contain this outbreak.
WHO spokesperson in Sierra Leone, Dr. Margaret Harris.
Africa on the Move.
When we think of robots, we think only of Japan, or perhaps Germany. But Ghana is now aiming to change that, at least in Africa. Ghanaian high school students have taken up the challenge of building robots that could rescue people from collapsed mine pits. Some of the machines can even separate rotten cocoa beans from a pool of beans. The project is part of an initiative launched by the Ghana Robotics Academy Foundation. From Accra, Isaac Kalechi with this robotic report.
1, 2, 3.
That is the sound of small sensory robots programmed to move around this small computer laboratory of Faith Montessori School in Accra. They were built by high school students participating in a national robotics competition. One of the students is Kezia, who showed me around.
Is it that it is trying to locate the lines?
Yes. Yeah, the black line.
These robots are models of bigger robots which would have particular tasks to do in the mining industry. They have been programmed accordingly, as Kezia explained.
It's supposed to follow all the series of black lines through the turns in every corner to reach the green circle in time. For example, if someone is trapped in a mine, the robots can be able to follow the mine rules to go and rescue the person and be back out safely.
According to KZS fellow student Shafiq Ijazi, it should be possible for them to improve the robots and enhance their performance.
In addition to this, we could build a avoider, which would use the ultrasonic sensor. That way, it throws sound waves and then it receives them back. So you realize that if you add an avoider to this, probably if there's an obstacle in front of the robot, it's going to stop maybe, let's say, 30 centimeters away, turn, and then continue the course.
Science education in Ghana has always been a challenge for students at this level. They consider the subject difficult and too theoretical. Educators wanted to change this perception, and this led to the formation of the Ghana Robotics Academy Foundation. Several robotic clubs were set up in various schools across the country. These schools compete for prizes by building robots that perform specific tasks. The event is in its fourth year, and Dr. Yao Okreku Yirinchi says it has been revealing.
But I'd like to start with those who, because of difficulty in appreciating mathematics and science, were turning away from it. What this initiative has been able to do almost instantly, they see that, oh, it's not as difficult as I thought. Or even if they didn't find it difficult, now they're seeing how it connects. An interest has been whipped up. We have had excellent feedback from these students, how their perception about science and math has all changed.
The chief challenge for the project has been financing and persuading Corporate Ghana to sponsor the purchase of equipment to build bigger and better robots.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra. You're listening to Africa Link from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. Still to come, how a humanitarian organization is helping lives in South Africa. But now, let's turn to politics. On Wednesday, Mozambicans go to the polls to elect their new leaders. The outcome is hard to predict. Political tensions between the traditional rivals, the ruling Frelimo and the former rebel movement Renamo, brought the country to the brink of a civil war. A last-minute peace treaty paved the way for the elections. This report by Antonio Cascais in Mozambique has been adapted for Africa Link by Abubakar Jallo.
Supporters of the Opposition Democratic Movement of Mozambique, MDM for short, sound confident and determined. We are in the port city of Beira in central Mozambique, bordering the Indian Ocean. Beira is the largest city in the country, with a population of about 500,000 people. Neither the powerful ruling Frelimo nor the former rebel movement Renamo rules this town, but rather MDM. MDM is a young party founded in 2009 by a Renamo dissident, Davis Simango. Simango has had a remarkable triumph here in Beira. Her main campaign message in this election is forget the old parties who only want power and money. The MDM won a surprise victory in the 2013 local elections. They beat the powerful ruling Frelimo in four major towns. Jose Domingos Manuel, board member of the party, is convinced that MDM is also now at the forefront of politics in Mozambique.
Davis Simango is the right man to lead this country. At the local level, we have proved that we can govern. We hope that the people will make the right call. 40 years of misrule is too much. Enough is enough. The population has had too much of it, and it does not want to be kept quiet any longer.
Despite these successes, Simango and his MDM party failed to replace Renamo and its leaders Alfonso Dhlakama as the leading opposition party. Dhlakama had threatened a return to civil war in Mozambique, but this saber-rattling appears not to have damaged his reputation. On the contrary, the rebel leader turned politician has only become more popular. He once again has an aura of a fighter who could perhaps terminate Frelimo's 40-year-long rule. Some observers had already written off Dhlakama because Renamo boycotted the 2013 municipal elections in protest against alleged government violations of the peace treaty, which had ended Mozambique's civil war in 1994. Dhlakama retreated with some followers into the bush and threatened to resume an armed struggle. In an exclusive interview with DW, Dhlakama lays out his campaign strategy for the upcoming elections.
My election campaign is quite different. The other candidates distribute flags, T-shirts, sometimes even money or drinks. I just have my campaign message, nothing else. I was in the bush in the Goromgosa Mountains for years. I went through the Frelimo bombing raids. People know I want to force Frelimo to practice good governance. And if I have understood the people's wishes and interests correctly, then I will have won this election.
Many foreign investors and members of Mozambique's economic elite are weary of Dhlakama. They take his threat to push the country back into civil war seriously.
That report by Antonio Cascais was presented by Abubakar Jallo.
Making a difference.
The gift of the givers. This South African-based relief organization was one of the first to offer assistance following the collapse of a church building in Lagos early last month. Founded in 1992, the Gift of the Givers has handed out more than $120 million in aid to millions of people during times of major disasters. Sobri Govende visited the headquarters of the organization in the South African city of Pietermaritzburg to find out how they are making a difference.
When I arrived at the head offices of the Gift of the Givers in Pietermaritzburg, about 120 kilometers west of Durban, I found the staff busy preparing for another foreign humanitarian mission. Founder and chairman of the organization, Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, was hard at work packing non-perishable and tinned food for delivery to Somalia. Suleiman told me they are currently concentrated in Somalia because the people there are not only caught up in an unending civil war, but also face starvation due to drought.
We do stockpile specific items for when a disaster comes, then we have goods on standby and we can move very fast. Somalia at the moment, we're selling 10 containers of aid, and it's predominantly food because there's a famine there. 6 containers of rice, 2 containers of biscuits, and a very special high energy protein supplement that Gift of the Givers, we ourselves have designed that food. It's ready to eat. Basically, you don't cook it, you don't heat it, you don't need water to mix, you just stir it, and you from anywhere in the world, you can drop it from a plane, from a helicopter, from the boat, people can eat it immediately.
Gift of the Givers, good morning. Yes, ma'am.
The offices of the organization is just as busy with staff members on the telephone interacting with sponsors, donors, companies and government officials about their relief work. This disaster relief organization was founded 20 years ago, and according to Suleiman, after graduating as a medical doctor, he traveled to Turkey, where a spiritual teacher advised him to involve himself in humanitarian work on a full-time basis. The Gift of the Givers was born after that trip, and the organization is funded entirely from donations. One of its first overseas missions, Suleiman said, was to Bosnia in the early 1990s.
We started off in South Africa. Our first project that time was a civil war in Bosnia. And, you know, I just make announcements in the public. People started rallying to me, and we made history because we built the world's first containerized mobile hospital. That got worldwide attention, which we took into Bosnia. And over a period of 22 years, from a disaster response agency, we have 21 different categories of projects.
Since the Bosnia mission, the Gift of the Givers has, over the past 22 years, embarked on relief missions during earthquakes, devastating floods, tsunamis, and during times of civil conflicts to countries such as Congo, Uganda, Mozambique, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Indonesia, Philippines, Haiti, and in the Middle East. More recently, the Gift of the Givers has been lauded for its humanitarian missions to the dangerous war zones of Gaza and Syria. One of the medical professionals who has been part of these overseas missions is 42-year-old Dr. Johnny De Beer. Dr. De Beer, who is of German descent, said he joined the missions because of the tremendous humanitarian work that the organization is involved in.
Gift of the Givers have bought their own equipment because when you go to these disaster zones, you don't always have the equipment there that you need. In fact, you very rarely do. So Gift of the Givers does a holistic approach when they go to these disaster zones.
That report was compiled by Sobri Govende. And as always, before we go, a reminder of our main stories. Nigerian police blocked the Bring Back Our Girls campaigners from marching to the presidency as the activists marked 6 months since the Chibok girls were abducted by Boko Haram. The WHO has said the Ebola death threat has risen to 70% and projected thousands of infections more by the end of the year. And Mozambique goes to the polls on Wednesday to choose a new president and lawmakers. That's all we have time for. For comments and suggestions, send us a text message to +491609575910 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany. Thanks for your company. I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Bye for now.